I'm Brian.
I'm Griff. And this is the eBay for Business podcast, your source for the information and inspiration to help you start, manage, and grow your business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 203. Welcome back to the desk, Brian Burke.
It's great to be back. How are things going with you?
Well, I have to thank you for coming in early to help us with our test because we did some studio rewiring so that it works better with Zoom.
I like the fact that you said we. I didn't really do any studio rewiring, but I'll take some credit.
But you were here for the test, and if you weren't here for the test, I couldn't have run the test.
That's true. I was here for the test.
I needed a bum in the seat with a mouth at the mic, and it's exactly what we got, so it worked.
I'm the bum in the seat.
That's a theater thing.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I was only in one play in my life.
What's important to the producer of any play? Bums and seats.
Bums and
get
seats.
Get the bums and the seats. Well, a lot more than that.
And buying some popcorn.
So there's no way to get bums in the seats on a podcast, but we assume that people are downloading, and that's a good thing.
Well, and we know they're downloading. We get some records from Libsyn on that, which is great.
Yeah, the numbers are going up. Thank you very much, listener, for telling your friends.
And keep sending us questions and comments and stuff so that we can make sure that we're meeting your needs.
Oh, and boy, do we have some questions, comments, suggestions, and complaints this week.
Oh, boy.
But that comes later.
So what is on the docket this week, Griff?
Well, first we have eBay product team manager Lucan McRandall. He's going to join us to talk about Terapeak for sourcing. And he's also going to be, this is again in conjunction with the monthly chat that's on community. So if you're listening to this on the day it drops Tuesday, tomorrow, Wednesday, he will be at 1 p.m. on our monthly chat.
Right. We've got a monthly chat that we now have a topic based. And so Lucan will be the third one where we've got, and he'll be focused on Terapeak.
Specifically on using it for sourcing.
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, we have a whole long list of questions to answer, Brian, on topics like draft listings. This recently announced, I don't know if you saw this, the USPS announcement regarding the end of USPS reseller discounts. And we have some questions on returns, actually a suggestion. And there's a lot more, so I'm not going to tease all the questions. You'll have to listen. But before we even get there, I was wondering if there's any news this week.
Well, the only news I have this week is that we, as always, are providing seller protections to any and all sellers impacted by the severe weather and subsequent flooding in the south and southeast of the country. To learn more, visit the announcement board at community.ebay.com.
Yeah, there's a whole post there, and it's kind of the boilerplate that we've been using for the last several years. Whenever there's severe weather, tornadoes, in this case, it was just rain that wouldn't stop, and Kentucky.
It was horrible.
Yeah,
I mean, the images coming out of Kentucky and areas are bad.
Yeah. So there will be some sellers who were impacted. The last thing we want you to worry about is your eBay standing. So we got you covered.
And it goes both ways. If you're a seller in that area, obviously, and you're unable to ship out, you're covered. But it's also if you're a seller who was shipping into that area.
Exactly.
Obviously, the post office or FedEx or whoever may not be able to deliver your item on time, technically, but you're covered as well.
Once a month, in conjunction with our eBay community team, we invite a guest from eBay to talk about the topic of the month for that monthly chat. For August, we're exploring sourcing. Senior product manager Lucan Randall is part of the seller experience team, and he's joining us today to talk about an aspect of Terapeak with which a lot of sellers might not be familiar. Welcome, Lucan.
Hi, Griff. Thanks for having me.
Many sellers, of course, our audience, I believe 100% of sellers, are familiar with Terapeak product research. I use it all the time. But a lot of sellers might not be familiar with Terapeak Sourcing Insights. Can you explain to us what Sourcing Insights is?
Sourcing Insights is exactly what it sounds like. It's a product designed to point you towards categories that are currently trending, as well as what products are performing well in those categories to give you some sense of what you can source when you're in the field and then sell later on eBay.
How do we access this?
Sellers can access Sourcing Insights from the Seller Hub research tab specifically. You can access it with a store subscription of basic or above in the US, or a shop subscription in any of the 8 other regions that the research tab is available in.
We're very familiar with product research, but how does Sourcing Insights and product research relate to one another when it comes to research itself?
Sourcing Insights and product research are great partners, so to speak. And just like many people have been using product research when they're out in the field, just like I mentioned before, Sourcing Insights can tell you what categories you should be sourcing for and what kind of products you might consider sourcing. Product research comes in handy when you need to list those products because it can show you how to price what kind of keywords you might want to include in the title, and what kind of images you'll need when you're listing. But on top of that, product research and sourcing insights are very complementary in that they can be combined to further improve your sourcing abilities when used together. This will give you a lot more insights into trends and products that perform well. And as we mentioned, you can use both products in the field when you've got potential inventory in front of you that you can source. And both will give you important insights into whether or not they will perform well right now and what you can list them for.
What information, as a seller, should I be looking at in order to get the most out of sourcing insights?
Some of the things that sourcing insights provides that product research doesn't include, first of all, a sell-through rate for a specific category. That will tell you whether or not your items are likely to sell within a category in a 30-day period. On top of that, we also provide an important metric called search-to-listing ratio. And this tells you how much buyer interest there is in a specific category compared to the number of available listings. You can get a sense for the overall demand. And on top of that, when you're looking within a category, sourcing insights can provide you with pre-built item-specific combinations. So these combinations are designed to show you what kind of products will sell well within a category. It won't tell you exactly what the product is, but it will give you a starting point.
Is it possible for me as a seller to follow up on that, to use that information to determine what I might want to avoid when it comes to a product sourcing opportunity or category?
Sourcing insights is better used when looking at what is currently doing well. There's a lot of products that might not be doing well within a specific category, but when you combine sourcing insights with product research, it will give you more information on what has sold and what hasn't sold within a specific period. You can take the information that you've received from sourcing insights and then apply it to product research to get a better sense of what is trending and then conversely, what isn't trending.
I understand how product research works, and I have to admit it is really useful when I'm trying to determine how to list a product and how to price it. You mentioned product research for sourcing as well. How can product research tell me what to source?
I think a lot of sellers have picked up on the value of product research, not just as a listing tool, but as a sourcing tool. And many might have learned some tips or tricks, but fundamentally, I think the value of product research in sourcing comes when you use a generic search term within a specific category, rather than just searching all categories with a very specific brand or keyword combination. Start off with a broader term, something easy like jackets, but within a specific category. Like clothing, shoes, and accessories.
Right.
And that will help you target anything that includes that keyword, but it'll exclude anything that doesn't come within the category that you're specifically interested in. And this will help you identify some of the top performing listings. Even within a set of search results, you'll be able to see different types of products recurring more often than others. And that should give you a sense of what is selling well, and you should be able to target those specific products as well in order to compete with some of the listings that you've already found.
Okay, so I think I understand this a little bit better. When you're using product research and you want to use it as a tool to help with informing you about what to source, you use it as though it's a funnel. So you start off at the top with a very wide range within a category, and then based on what you're hoping for, you start filtering it down to a more narrow funnel to find the items that are specific to the kinds of items you are hoping to source.
Exactly, yeah. I think the funnel is a perfect analogy. In some ways, it's almost the inverse of the buyer experience when looking for a specific product that you want to buy. Instead, you're wearing the hat of a seller trying to find something that you want to sell.
Yeah.
And the insights generated there are designed to point you in the right direction.
Are there any limitations that I, as a seller, would want to be aware of when using sourcing insights and product research?
Well, I think a lot of the limitations that we find in these products are kind of limitations that exist within eBay as a whole. But in some ways, they're not exactly limitations. They're designed to give you freedom as a seller or as a buyer when trying to identify the exact product that you want to list or that you want to purchase. eBay doesn't force you to adopt a specific product profile. In most cases, you can list a product with your own descriptor, with your own images, using your own item specifics. And I think that's where the difficulty comes into play when trying to figure out exactly what you want to sell. Some categories are much easier to search through because the item specifics are more well-defined. For example, if I'm looking at cell phones, a lot of those specifics about a product are going to be very black and white, cut and dried. Most of the listings will include them, so it's easy to identify what's doing well and what isn't in that category. Some categories, on the other hand, like clothes, for instance, especially clothes that might not be manufactured anymore, are a little less defined when it comes to the item specifics that will be included within a listing. So you might have a pair of jeans on hand, and you don't know who made it, or you don't know exactly what material is in it. There's no specific color that you can identify that exactly matches what you're trying to sell. So you'll fill in what you think will best define that product based upon your understanding of it. And we'll pick up on those definitions, but it might not necessarily match somebody else's definition of that product. The item-specific quality within a category varies, and as a result, the benefits of the insights that we can provide for each category will also vary.
Like any data tool, it's going to rely on the data set indicated by filters like item specifics, which is what we use to actually differentiate between products that are somewhat identical but have different aspects.
Right. And I think in general, the better you can do as a seller when you list a product and define all of the details and item specifics associated with that product, the better off you'll be in general when searching for items within that category as well.
And it can be a learning experience. You'll figure out what works, what returns more items that are matching what you hope to find as opposed to those that aren't related. And this brings up another interesting point because say I've gone through all this and I'm sourcing an item and I've built out this search and product research, you know, gives me the insights I want on how to list that product. But then later on, I may want to do the same thing and I don't want to have to go through the process of rebuilding that entire search with the right filters. Is there a way to save a search that I've already built so I can access it in the future?
Yeah, that's a great question and something that often comes up when sellers ask for new features from product research in particular. And it, you know, technically it could be considered a limitation, but we don't really want to reinvent the wheel here. And most browsers today allow you to bookmark a URL. So when you land on a news site or a social media site, you can bookmark that and return to it in just a few clicks. And really, we've taken advantage of that because whenever you build out a search in product research, all of the additional filters or the date range that you've added or the specific category that you're searching in is included in the URL. So when you bookmark that search, you're actually bookmarking the specific search that you've just built. And you can return to that whenever you want. I myself have built a Terapeak product research folder in my browser. And whenever I have a search that I want to revisit, I'll just bookmark it there. And within one or two clicks, I can return to it wherever I have that browser available. So I can access it from my cell phone.
I still use bookmarks. I mean, it's very Web 1.0, but they work. And you can build, regardless of what kind of browser you're using, you can build a folder and then put them all in there. Is there a possibility, for example, that that kind of search feature can be something in the future that could be saved to the seller's account in case they don't bookmark it, they just save it and it's saved in eBay?
I think that's a really good question. And ultimately, there are many things that we could do if we were to build out a save search function that I think would add additional benefit beyond what you can get from a bookmark. So it's definitely something we'd like to explore. We just want to make sure we do it right before we dive headfirst into that so that we're sure that whatever features we're bringing to our sellers are features that they're going to make the most of and will genuinely improve their ability to use product research.
Well, there are many, many different tools, both on eBay and outside of eBay, that any business owner can use to help understand their particular niche market or category market so they can source and source wisely so that their prices are competitive. But if you're not using Terapeak, specifically the sourcing insights tool, put it on your list. It really is a great tool. Is there anything else you'd like to add about Terapeak or just sourcing or tools in general?
In general, I think Seller Hub has a lot of tools that I think will advantage or put most sellers at an advantage. And I think if you're making use of whatever you have in the listings tab, including your ability to manage active listings, your ability to manage your orders, your ability to view and manage listings that have ended or didn't sell, then it's going to make you a stronger seller in the long run. Similarly, if you take advantage of the marketing tab, especially when it comes to promoting your products, I think that's going to have a huge impact on your sales and your ability to sell. Now, when it comes to the research tab and Terapeak product research and sourcing insight, because I'm the owner of that product, I know for a fact that when sellers use these products, it has a fundamental impact on the net revenue that they generate and their ability to converts buyers when they land on their listing. Please use those products. It will have a fundamental impact on your business, and in general will make more sellers more successful on eBay, which makes eBay an easier place for everybody to sell in the long run.
I actually do use Terapeak for my particular niche, which is I'm constantly sourcing fragrance, and that is a huge moving market. Things go up in value, things go down in value, and it's been really great to use Terapeak. I mean, I pretty much know what I'm looking for, but what I'm more interested in is where is the market right now? And it can help me with price points because I don't want to overpay or pay so close that my margins just don't make it worth it. And it's been really helpful. I'm a huge proponent, huge lover of Terapeak. It really makes a difference when I'm sourcing, and it can make a big difference for you. So check it out. And I want to remind everyone that if you have a question about Terapeak or sourcing, and you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com or call it in at 888-723-4630. You just might want to visit the eBay Monthly Chat on Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Lucan will be on board at that point to answer any and all questions related to sourcing, and it's really easy to find. Just go to community.ebay.com and click Monthly Chat with eBay staff under the Community Info link, and we'll also include a link to the Monthly Chat in the transcript episodes for episode 203. Lucan, thanks so much. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, you as well, Greg. Thank you very much for having me.
Lucan McRandall is Senior Product Manager for Terapeak, and Lucan will be on board to answer any and all questions you might have related to sourcing on our monthly chat with eBay staff on Wednesday, August 10th at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. You can find the chat at community.ebay.com and then clicking on the monthly chat with eBay staff under the Community Info link. We'll also include a link to the monthly chat area of Community in the transcript for episode 203.
You got questions?
We've got answers. And this week, Brian, we're going to start off with a call into our voice line. It's a question sent by eBay seller Tina.
Hi, Griff and supporting cast. This is Tina, and I sell under the store Lake Exchange. I'm fairly new selling on eBay. I started November of last year, and my question is regarding drafts. I created several this spring. We were going to be out of town for 10 days, and I wanted to be able to continue to list, and that worked well. Other than the ones I did not use suddenly evaporated and disappeared. Can you find out and confirm when you create a draft, how long does it wait for you before you send it? I listen every week. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Tina. Yes, a question about drafts. I was curious to know if you knew the answer, because I do.
I don't know the answer to
Ooh,
this.
I love it when you don't know the answer, and I do. Yes.
I don't use drafts.
Oh, I use them all the time.
I tend to, like, if I'm going to sit down and I go through it. And I know a lot of our sellers use drafts because they'll then upload photos at a different time and things like that.
There's a whole method of using a draft with my iPhone, because I use my iPhone now for all my pictures. So I create the listing on the desktop, but I don't do the photos. And then I save it as a draft. I take the photos of my item using my iPhone, real quick edit on the iPhone. You can edit photos. It's so simple. And I keep saying I want to do a class in this, but we'll have to set up for a video someday. And then when my photos are ready, I just add them to the draft in my iPhone, and I do these in batches. And then I go, and the reason why I like to have a bunch of drafts is, say I do 10 listings in one day. When they're all ready to go, they're drafts, I can submit them, and it goes into the bulk edit tool. And if there's a problem with any of the listings I missed, it'll alert me on the left-hand side with a little red triangle and a little exclamation point saying there's, you know, a problem here. And then I might have forgot to put the price in or something. So I can fix all those little things, and then I'll submit them in one big batch.
And then only hitting submit once then.
So here's the answer, Tina. A draft lasts only 75 days from the day you create it. That's as much time as you got. So it's not even 3 months. Somebody asked me another question, say, well, what if I edit it? Does that start the clock again?
Oh, great question.
And the answer is no. Once a draft is created, there's nothing you can do to extend the time that it's going to be around. And here's another bit of information that, in case you didn't know, if you're a B2C seller,
that would be business to consumer.
Business to consumer, which means you're using our business consumer version of the, you know, the website. You can create up to 5,000 drafts. You can have that many created at any given moment. But if you're a new seller and technically assumed to be like a consumer to consumer seller, you're brand new, you're going to have a different listing flow. And any of the drafts that you create, you're going to only be able to do 250 at a time. And if you're using the mobile app, you can only create up to 250. That's any seller. You can only create up to 250 drafts at a time on the mobile app. You can always go back to the desktop and create 4,000 plus whatever to get to the 5,000.
Well, some good information for Tina. And I also just want to say welcome, Tina.
Welcome, Tina.
And a new seller. It's always good to hear from new sellers.
Yeah. So if you create those drafts, make sure you list them. Drafts don't sell. You have to actually list them to the site.
I wonder how many of our other listeners knew like the 75-day limit.
I think we talked about this on a previous episode because the way I had to verify the information was go looking. I knew I asked the product team sometime in the last year.
Okay.
And I found the email. And before I answered the question, I sent them another email and said, hey, is this information still accurate? And they said, yes. So there it is. That's the information that I got when I asked the first time.
eBay seller Jennifer has an interesting proposal for us to consider. She sent the following to podcast@ebay.com.
Uh-oh.
Dear eBay Podcast, longtime listener, you provide very informative information. I appreciate all you do. That being said, I have a question that I hope you can clarify or consider. I've been on eBay as a seller for a long time. It is my preferred way to sell and shop. However, I have used other platforms. On those other platforms, once you leave feedback, the transaction is considered over and final, and you cannot return the item after you leave the feedback. It seems on eBay this is not the case.
Mm-hmm.
I only ask because I recently had a transaction where the customer got her item, left great feedback on how much she loved the item, even messaged me thanking me, only to turn around a week later sending a picture of a very damaged item that I know I did not send that way. I understand that damage after the fact might happen, but the buyer is now claiming it came that way, even though they already left positive feedback on how much they liked the item and messaged me thanking me. One would assume the transaction is complete and over. I take returns automatically, so I could not deny the request. The buyer will get the refund from me when I get the item back, but I feel very scammed. Would eBay ever consider feedback left as the end of the transaction and returns can no longer happen? I assume, because as a buyer I do this, most people inspect their item before leaving feedback and try to resolve any issues before doing so. What are your thoughts on all of this? Thank you, Jennifer.
And to be fair, I actually sent this to you earlier, so I wanted you to mull it over. I know which platform she's talking about in particular, because as a buyer, I've experienced this, and it will be nameless. But the platform sends you a note saying, rate your seller. And the reason why is that platform withholds payment until you either rate your seller and they say there's nothing wrong, or if they don't hear from you.
There's a certain period of time goes by, then they'll release the funds.
They'll release the funds.
And then at that moment, they also then stop you, I believe, from being able to leave feedback.
Well, you can still leave feedback, but it looks like your only options are positive, right?
Okay.
But you can't dispute the item at that point.
Right.
So it says you're clicking this button that says, I've received my item, I've accepted it, and I'm happy with it, basically. And once you've done this, you cannot say, I want to return it. So the door closes.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is. I've heard this from sellers, especially fashion sellers.
Yeah.
Where they'll say, you know, the buyer can get the item. Like, let's say I buy an extra large shirt.
Mm-hmm.
I get that item. I can see, is it extra large? Is it the blue color that I wanted? Are all the buttons? Are there any holes in the shirt? Very quickly, I should be able to assess, is it what I thought I was going to buy?
Yeah.
And if not, then I can turn around and say no and want to return it. In those types of scenarios, I can see the desire of a seller to want us to have a kind of a limited amount of time where the buyer can inspect the item and return the item.
I should add that on this other platform, if the buyer doesn't rate the seller and the funds are released, that doesn't mean that the buyer still can't say, I want to return this. There is a return window past that. But if you go down path B or path A, let's say, and you say you're happy with it, you're not going to be able to change your mind and return it. I can see benefits and I can see some...
Yeah, the only thing for me is like across our entire platform, I think it would be hard for us to do because...
Yeah, it would be.
Because there's a component of, did you get what you were expecting? Did the wheel fall off the toy car like a day after you leave the feedback and you thought you were buying a high quality item. Now you can't return that item.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know some sellers may argue, well, that's product quality, and that should go into the product rating as opposed to the seller rating. But if that's important for us, I would think a seller would want to know, oh, my product isn't meeting my buyer's needs, and so I want to make sure those buyers are whole. So I think it would be tough for us to do across the entire platform.
I think it would actually be tough for us to do it in thinking about it and then maintain quality. And what I've noticed about other websites that have something like this system in place is that they don't only make it easier for the seller in that case, but they make it super difficult for a buyer to return something. On one of these platforms, I wanted to return something for a very valid reason, and I had to upload 6 photos. And it's an item that you only need 1 or 2 photos to show what, you know, what you're looking at. And I did. I uploaded them. And I got a note back saying they weren't good enough quality. I thought, well, you know, I took them under a good light. So then I put the item in my light box that I use for selling. And took really good quality photos, like the kind of photos I use on eBay. And I got a note back saying, sorry, you're not supposed to upload stock photos. We need photos of the actual item. At which point, I have to admit, my dander was up. I thought, you know, I'm not only having to jump through hoops, but now this site is accusing me of uploading stock photos. And so I went back, put the item back in the light cube, drew the camera back, and I said, this is how I take photos. I don't upload stock photos. At which point, the rep realized they'd made a big mistake accusing the buyer of being potentially fraudulent. But to me, it was an interesting mindset. Now, I don't know much about this platform on the other side, but my suspicion is that it's a platform that was started by sellers for sellers.
Yes.
After that experience, wasn't so hot about shopping there anymore.
Yeah. I think that's the concern, and you know, it'd be interesting to hear what our team focused on feedback would have to say about something like this as well. Probably not high on their priority list, but my assumption is they would probably say, you know, what's the second order effect? Is it going to eventually mean there's less quality goods, or buyers have bad experiences where they can't rectify the experience, which then means they go elsewhere to shop?
Exactly.
Which is not what our sellers want.
No, absolutely. I won't say anything more. I'm not. And, you know, I work for the competitor to these sites, and I'm not going to denigrate them. I will say on a personal level that the experience leaves a lot to be desired. I feel a lot better shopping on eBay.
But we should let Jennifer know that we did send her email on to the folks who actually do work in this area, in this space. So they'll take a look at it and see if it's something that they do want to look at down the road.
Brian, our next question was phoned in to 888-723-4630 by eBay seller Robert.
I have more of a suggestion than maybe a question. And our eBay reports have really blossomed over the last several years with detailed information. But I feel one more column that would really help, especially people managing multiple listings, would just to have a cost of the item that we could insert when we list the item. It would calculate if we have multiples of those items. And it would be great for inventory tracking, say, for the end of the year, our cost of goods that remain that we could see. My username is my58543, and my store is Bobby's Football Things, Pins and Things. And anyway, love your podcast. I've been paying more attention in recent times as I've tried to take this thing maybe to the next level. I know it's not a question, more of a suggestion, but appreciate the opportunity to leave it out there. Have a great day. Thank you.
Okay, well, there it is. That's a nice suggestion. And you're probably wondering why I included it, because you may remember we've already talked about this.
And it's not the first time we've heard this from sellers. It's probably one of the number one requests that the reporting team get.
So it sounded to me like Robert doesn't realize that this suggestion already exists, albeit in just one field.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah.
But it is a useful field. So, Robert, if you go back to episode 183, it was me and Rebecca, and I go into great detail about how you can actually hack our current single custom label field, which I'm about to tell you about how to get there, into several columns. But let's start off with getting that column to display for you. Go to your active listings in Seller Hub. Go to active listings. If you do not see a custom label column, go to the customized table link, which is up on the right-hand side just over the active listing list, and click it, and then look for the checkbox for custom label, and make sure it's checked so that it's added to your display. And when you go back, you'll see a column that you can edit in line, and it's a custom label field. Once you've exposed it, When you download a transaction report, that field will be included, but only if you've checked that box. That's important. And you can also add that custom label field to the create listing flow. When you start a listing, then you only have to do this once. Go down to where you would enter your title and then click edit all options. There's a little pencil icon right there. And then there'll be some toggle options. Make sure that you toggle the option for custom label to on. When you go back, you'll see there's a field where you can see a custom label and you can enter in whatever data you want, for example, the cost of the goods. Now, again, in episode 183, I've discovered a spreadsheet hack, which is pretty well known. I just discovered it on the internet and was pretty surprised by it. You can turn that single column into multiple columns, but we're not going to go through that again. And again, once you've enabled the custom label field, it's going to appear in your transaction report, so you can use that data. I use it for cost of goods sold. It's the most important bit of data, but I also use it for other bits of data as well.
One thing as you were going through that description that I think Robert might ask is, since it's going, you're toggling it on during the listing flow, and now you're entering it a piece of information, will that show up in the listing?
No, that's a secret label. So that label is only viewable to you in the active listing view when you download a report for transactions. And one thing I need to say, by the way, Brian, to make this clear, is that field is not pre-formatted for the report. So it's only a text field. You'll have to format it when you open your transaction report spreadsheet for the data you enter it in. So if you're using it for currency and you want to be able to sum it, you'll have to select the whole column and then change the format to currency. And again, I'm going to repeat this one more time because I really think this is an interesting hack. In episode 183, we actually outline this spreadsheet hack that any seller can use to create more than one custom label column, your single field. And it's just using some commas and putting in the data, being consistent.
Right.
I have four columns that I now have in my reports after I apply the hack,
right,
which is, you know, not, you have to do a few steps. So thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to talk about that, Robert.
And, you know, hopefully, Robert, that will meet your needs as far as being able to enter that additional information that you want in the report.
Yeah.
And I also know that that team that's, you know, the reports have improved dramatically over the last couple of years.
Yeah. We've put in the request that we need more than just one. We would like to have two or three custom label fields. I think that would be the best solve. So we'll see if that happens. So our next question, Brian, was called into our voice line at 888-723-4630. By eBay seller Joel.
Hi, my name is Joel Gonzalez. My eBay username is Boxes from the Attic. Here's my question. What is the easiest or quickest way to contact eBay about a glitch or a technical issue, either on the eBay app or on the website? Recently, I've had two such issues occur, and it was rather tricky to find out whether or not this was an ongoing issue or something specific to my account. Congratulations on the 200 episode. I look forward to hearing 200 more. Would love to have a mug if you could. Thank you again for all you do.
I think we can definitely get him a mug.
Well, that's never a problem, is it?
Nope. And thanks for the question, Joel. Actually, pretty straightforward. The way that you can report possible eBay technical issues is to report it on the Share eBay Technical Issues Board in Community. So you can go to community.ebay.com, hover your mouse cursor over the Community Info tab, and select Share eBay Technical Issues. Members of the product team monitor that board every day to check for possible issues to address.
Yeah, it is the channel for reporting any technical issues.
There are also some pages when we launch, especially newer products, where there is a report link on the page exactly, you know, right on the page. It's oftentimes very small text that'll say report. You can click on those and those will go straight back to the product managers as well.
Exactly. The thing about technical issues is that if it's just something that may be impacting a few people, we need you to talk about it on the technical issue board, or if there's a particular service or product on eBay that has that report link, use that. When something big happens on eBay, we hear about it within minutes.
Yeah.
So nothing goes unnoticed. These are the best ways to do that, though. That technical issue board, again, is monitored, so you can always post it there.
And finally this week, a correction. Oh, another correction.
Yeah, this is another correction. I told them we'd post it, so we're doing it.
Even we have technical issues or glitches here on the podcast team.
They're brain glitches.
From eBay seller Orlando, who chastised Griff with the following email. Griff, you butchered my store name, laughing out loud, LOL. It's five teals in deals, as in steals in deals. In my store, you'll find both.
Oh, dear.
So that's the number five, then teals, the letter N, deals.
Yeah.
Is for, so as in steals and deals. Just thought I'd jab you. Thanks again, Orlando. Well, Orlando, thank you for that.
I stand corrected. But in my defense, Your Honor, I must say that it is a bit of a confusing name.
But it's creative. I like it.
Five teals and deals.
Yeah, it's like the five is like an S.
I get it. That's what I think I said, right? Or he mentioned something about five-finger discounts, and I thought, wait a minute, I don't know if you want to promote that on your business. But anyway, Orlando, I hope you're happy. We've corrected it. Now stand back as thousands of people come to buy from you because yes, they heard it on the show. It's fun, isn't it?
It is. And if you want to join the fun here on eBay for Business, call us on 888-723-4630.
That's 888-723-4630. You can call that hotline at any time of the day, any day of the week, at your convenience, while you're drinking your coffee, you got your slippers on, your bathrobe, you just got out of the shower, you want to call us and you want to leave a note, you want to leave a complaint, a suggestion, we are here to listen. And if it's appropriate and not too blue, we just might put it on the air.
I think you left out a beverage.
What?
Beer. Well, you could be having a beer.
And a coffee at the same time?
Well, no, different times of day.
What are they trying to do? Create a wormhole in the universe?
Maybe, but we digress. And if you're not a call on the phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And now it's time for your 3-point podcast checklist.
Check the announcement board at ebay.com/announcements for up-to-date seller news every day.
Yeah, and go back and listen to episode 183 if you hadn't heard it for the spreadsheet hack for creating more columns. I think it's a good one.
Can I throw in a plug for eBay Open?
Why? You can.
Said fill in.
Well, no, that's me filling, not you. Jeez, Brian, you haven't learned to read a script.
You got to cut all that now.
Maybe I'll leave it in.
Need to review anything in this episode? It's easy. Check the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to find the links we referenced during the episode.
On our next episode, which will be episode 204, we'll have another seller visiting us in the studio. And this time, it's a seller we already talked about a few episodes back, or talked with. It's eBay seller Vicki Egan, and she'll be here from Las Vegas to talk about the current state of her business and selling on eBay.
And we'd like to again thank our guests this week, Lucan McRandall. You can catch Lucan on Wednesday, August 10th at 1 p.m. Pacific time on our monthly community chat at community.ebay.com.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.